This is an iHeart podcast.
Joe Biden called half the country garbage, so we're going to talk about real estate. I'll explain in just a moment. Matt Walsh is here. Brianna Morello is here. Owen Schroyer, Mike Benz. We're so packed. I don't know how we're packing it all into an hour. And I'm right. Okay, let's have a discussion on the latest and greatest, meaning worst, in the Kamala Harris campaign, the Harris-Biden shade wars, the disaster that is the White House, the Democrat Party right now, DEI, and so many other things. It's going to be such a great show. So let's discuss the comments you've already seen 10,000 times, which we'll get to in just a moment. Kamala Harris, what you should know before we play the comments, is last night was supposed to be a big night for Kamala Harris. Her staff, her campaign staff, they set up this huge, important-looking speech. Now, of course, she didn't say anything important at all. It was all the same stuff you've already heard. Trump's Hitler, Nazis, all that other crap. But this is all the same stuff. She didn't say anything. But the point of it is, for campaigns, there are big events. Sometimes you're jumping on an opportunity. Sometimes you're planning something ahead of time. But big blowout campaign events that are supposed to, designed to move the needle for you. And how do you move the needle right now? Well, yesterday was obviously Tuesday. So that meant it was 1 week until the election. Before we get to Harris and Biden, let's discuss something here. Airtime, attention spans. You see, have you ever heard the phrase, you know, budget your time, budget your time? But what is the essence behind that? Well, you need to figure out. I need to make sure I have give myself so much time to sleep, so much time to work out, so much time to work. I have to budget my time. But why? Why do you have to budget your time? Because time is limited. It's not unlimited. There's a limited amount, so you better figure out, I need so much time for this and so much time for that. Budget your time. Well, campaigns budget their time, and they tightly budget their time because there's only so much left, especially in the final week before a presidential election that will not be, very likely, will not be decided by that many votes. We can all convince ourselves, I've convinced myself at this point in time that Trump's going to blow her out, but historically, traditionally, that's not how it goes. Campaigns, 10,000 votes here, 10,000 votes there, so they have to tightly budget their time. And they sit down, you should know, and agonize over this. They sit down as a staff around a big conference room and they have the papers out. Okay, well, CBS wants us to come do this on this day, but if we do that, then we can't get to Pennsylvania in time, but maybe then we have enough time to get to Michigan and give a speech. Every minute counts. Every 30-minute, 1 minute block counts. And attention spans, that's really what they're going for. What they want, what the campaigns, both of them, Trump and Kamala at this point in time, what they want is your attention. They want you paying attention to them, what they're saying, what they're for, what they're against. They want your eyeballs on them, talking about them. That is the idea. Give me the spotlight. And when Kamala Harris's campaign sets up a big speech in Washington, D.C., it looks really important. The idea is, they're trying to grab your attention and hold you. That's what they want. And they understand time is of the essence. As of last night, like I said, it was 1 week. 1 week is nothing. They needed last night to be an attention grabber because they're almost out of time. So they set up this huge, this huge expensive, that was very expensive to put on. They put on this huge, expensive campaign event, and Dome gets up there and blah, 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 says a bunch of stupid things. But practically while she was doing it, Joe Biden went on camera and called the supporters of Donald Trump garbage.
Just the other day, a speaker at his rally called Puerto Rico a floating island of garbage. Well, let me tell you something. I don't know the Puerto Rican that I know. Or Puerto Rico, where I'm in my home state of Delaware. They're good, decent, honorable people. The only garbage I see floating out there is his supporters.
There's no way you can chop that up or mince that up. The media has been over backwards and forwards today trying to, well, there was an apostrophe. That's not really what he said. Everyone saw what he said. That's what he said. He said what he said. He said what he meant. And so what have you heard about, just everything else aside, here we are on Wednesday night on I'm Right. It's been about 24 hours roughly since those comments were made. For the last 24 hours, all the social media you've been consuming, all the TV you've been watching, radio, what have people been talking about? How many times in the last 24 hours have you seen Kamala Harris's speech referenced? And how many times in the last 24 hours have you seen Joe Biden's little 5-second, 10-second comment referenced? Joe Biden took up precious real estate, precious time the Kamala Harris campaign very likely did not have. The last 24 hours have been dedicated to people covering it, talking about it at length. Of course, the media is denying it, but that in and of itself is precious time. The Kamala Harris campaign, they didn't have a night to give away, and the American media had to spend the entire night last night and all day today giving up their precious time, dedicating it to Joe Biden and his comments. That's not what he meant. It's taken out of context. That's time Harris didn't have. And the comments were so bad, so damaging. This party, where you can never really find an inch of daylight between any Democrat, this party almost immediately, they knew it was so bad, they had to lock shields and speak out against the sitting president of the United States of America. Josh Shapiro went on CNN. Here's how it went.
Governor, first off, just what's your response to that comment from President Biden, where it sounds like he's calling Trump supporters their garbage?
Yeah, look, I had not heard that until now, Caitlin, so I'm kind of giving you my fresh reaction to it. I would never insult the good people of Pennsylvania or any Americans, even if they chose to support a candidate that I didn't support.
They know. That's a man from the critical swing state of Pennsylvania who's very popular there. Sadly, he is. He understands exactly how comments like that are going to land with people, and not just Trump supporters. Frankly, Trump supporters, all of us who are voting for Trump, we're used to that. We've been called Nazi and everything else for 10 years. Garbage. That's about the nicest thing they've called us. But for people maybe undecided, maybe people trying to decide who the greater evil is, you know, people who hate Trump and hate Kamala Harris, how does it look when the president of the United States points to half the country and says, you're garbage? It looks terrible. But why did he say it? What's the reason? Why would this come out? Well, Joe Biden, Democrats, your liberal Aunt Peggy, I'm going to tell you something. You probably already know, you've probably already accepted this, but I'm going to tell you something. As someone who has lived in Washington, D.C., I lived there for a year, surrounded by Democrats. You got to go to a party, an event on Friday, it's all Democrats. Got to meet friends out at a bar on Saturday night, all Democrats, Democrats, Democrats. I have been in an environment that is all blue before, so I'm here to tell you, this is how they talk about you all the time. All the time. This is not some kind of random one-off. When Democrats gather together, they mock you. They talk about how stupid you are, how evil you are. Did you see, remember when Donald Trump got shot and you saw Democrat after Democrat go online and say something along the lines of, oh, it's too bad the bullet missed. And maybe you were shocked. How could these people be so evil? They talk about that all the time. Why did it come out of Joe Biden's mouth? Well, because Joe Biden doesn't have full control of his mind anymore. And so a man who already was lacking a filter, well, now that filter's completely gone. Joe Biden simply went on television in his dementia-addled state, and he voiced what every single Democrat in this country feels about you. They hate you. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible place to be. Look, Hillary Clinton, she's really one of the first to kick this off back in 16.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it. And unfortunately, there are people like that. And he has lifted them up.
Please remember, if you're young, you may not know this. It never happened before in politics. Obama was really kind of the first who started to do this. Then Hillary Clinton mainstreamed it. Now every Democrat does it. You always insulted your opponent. You never, ever, ever demonized his opponents. Now this is simply how they talk, because it's how all of them feel. And Joe Biden has done this before. He has simply become the voice of how the American Democrat feels. We are divided, and I don't think it can be repaired. Remember when he gave that speech they build is so important, and stood up and did this in front of the country?
Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic. No matter what the white supremacists and the extremists say.
Now for the sober part. Obviously, we can laugh about the fact that it gobbled up precious real estate, it gobbled up precious time, it hurt Harris, that may be the difference. But here's the sober part. I'm just not sure that we can put Humpty Dumpty back together again. No matter which side you're on, no matter what you feel about all this, once you get to this place as a country, how do you heal that? It's very difficult to heal it, because when you start talking like that about other people, they don't want to heal it. I don't want to heal it. When people talk about healing the divisions, I have no desire to heal the divisions. Why would I want to heal divisions with people who call me Nazi garbage? Sorry, I prefer the divide to be wider. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Hopefully, the fact that we have political prisoners in this country also makes you uncomfortable. Owen Schroyer was one of those prisoners. He and my friend Brianna Morello are going to join us next and discuss how evil this regime has been. It goes a lot more than comments about garbage. Before we get to that, let's get to this. Your cell phone company's garbage, unless you have Pure Talk. Verizon is a garbage company. AT&T, T-Mobile. I'm not talking about the quality of service or phones. I'm talking about their values. These major corporations now take your money and they use them against you. They do all these DEI evil crappy things with your money. Their charitable giving is almost always to some dirtball commie cause. You pay your cell phone bill, you think you're paying for mobile service, you're paying for Planned Parenthood. Not at Pure Talk. You want to pay a lot less? You want to switch to the cell phone company that shares your values and pay less? Can't stress that enough. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. You keep your phone, you keep your number. You don't sacrifice service. They're on the same network. puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word. One that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put 2 and 2 together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am not looking to score political points. I am looking to make progress. I pledge to listen to experts, to those who will be impacted by the decisions I make, and to people who disagree with me. Unlike Donald Trump, I don't believe people who disagree with me are the enemy. He wants to put them in jail. I'll give them a seat at the table.
Yeah. You know what struck me? It's not just the jail comment. Why did the Democrat women all dress like that with the shoulder pads? And it's so ugly. But anyway, back to her not putting people in jail. That is a huge relief. Here, I was worried that Democrats were going to start taking people on the other side and throwing them in prison. I'm just glad that kind of thing can't happen here. Anyway, joining me now, Owen Schroyer, host of the War Room with Owen Schroyer, and I'm pretty sure a guy who just got out of prison, and Brianna Morello, who is the host of the Brianna Morello Show. Okay, Brianna, first of all, I need you to address, I know we're going to get to Steve Bannon and stuff in a moment. Can we address the shoulder pad thing? I don't understand. Hillary did this too. Kamala's not, especially for a 60-year-old woman, she's not ugly. I mean, not like most feminists are. Why wear something like that?
Listen, I can't speak for any of them. The shoulder pad thing is gross to me. I don't own anything with shoulder pads, blazers, none of that. It's a way to make them look masculine, I think. And I think that's why they go with that. So they're the big head honcho at the table, can even say it. It's so gross.
Yeah, it is really gross. Okay, Owen, I bet you were relieved to find out that they are not interested in jailing their political opponents. That must be a load off your shoulders.
Well, of course, I don't believe that for one second. And a year ago today, we wouldn't be able to have this interview because, yes, I was in a federal prison put in there by the Biden DOJ for my political speech. And, of course, I'm not the only one. There are many more. Steve Bannon just got out of a political prison sentence. They're trying to put Donald Trump in jail. It's really incredible, isn't it? It's really incredible that they can sit here with a straight face. You know, later she goes on to talk about how Trump wants to use the military against his enemies. Well, they just signed a DOD directive for the first time in the history of the military and the Department of Defense that the military can use lethal force on the American citizens. That is a Biden-Harris administration DOD directive. So it's really incredible. And it really gets to a point here where 99% of the time, you never want to say 100% about anything, but 99% of the time, whatever they're accusing you of, that is the Democrats, they are guilty of. Not only have they already put their political opposition in prison, they will do it tenfold if they get another 4 years. Not only will Trump not use the military against the American people, they already have Department of Defense directives saying that they will do just that. And I'm guessing that's for the election results, just in case Harris should, quote unquote, win.
Just a reminder to everybody who watches this show regularly, what have I been telling you about the military? Are they destroying it? No, they're building a new one for a new purpose and a new enemy. And guess who that enemy is? It is exactly you. Okay, Brianna, let's deal with the Steve Bannon situation, which just gets my blood pressure through the roof. Obviously, we can point out the hypocrisy of everyone else who's been held in contempt of Congress and didn't go to jail, but we can move past the old lame conservative talking points about pointing out hypocrisy. The truth is, these people, it's not just Owen, they want to throw us all in jail. They did it to Steve Bannon, and just there hasn't been hardly a blip from the Republican eunuchs on Capitol Hill about it. I don't think I saw a single one speak up about it.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. I know you guys aren't surprised. That's how they operate these days. They don't care. They know that the DOJ is gunning for conservatives, and they continue to allow it to happen. You know, you guys just brought up, you know, the DOD going after American citizens and using lethal force potentially against them. DHS and the FBI also just put out an internal bulletin pretty much saying that anyone who denies the election results or passes along conspiracy theories, that they are actually domestic terrorists as well. And that just dropped yesterday. And have you heard anything from Speaker Mike Johnson? Absolutely not. So this is really just something that's going to continue to happen. Also, you know, Steve Bannon's going to be back on trial in New York in just a couple of weeks. And so although he's free now, it's temporary because he's going to probably be found guilty and sentenced to prison for a couple of years if he is found guilty. Again, they put you in these courtrooms with liberal juries and they know that you're going to lose. And that's how they're jailing their political opponents.
freaking ugly. Owen, yeah. Brianna, thank you both. Appreciate you. Owen, I'm glad you're out. Congrats, my brother. All right. Let's get into attempts to silence free speech, because as Owen just laid out there, as Brianna just talked about there, we're not a million miles away from these horrific things we've always read about in other countries. In a lot of ways, it's already happening here. And if you're paying attention at all to the DOD stuff, DOJ stuff, other stuff, they're ramping things up as rapidly as humanly possible. So let's discuss that with Mike Benz. He always has a lot to say. Before we get to Mike, let's discuss saving a baby's life. Kind of important, wouldn't you agree? Saving a baby's life. Well, that's what preborn does. Babies who are about to be aborted, they're defenseless. I know it's kind of a point that's obvious, but think about that. They can't speak. They can't riot. They can't protest. They can't vote. They have no chance. If mom wants to kill them, they have no chance, except for preborn is out there giving that mother an ultrasound. That's what they do. They bring these mothers who are about to abort their babies, they bring them in for a free ultrasound. She's not charged anything. And when a woman hears a heartbeat, she will change her heart almost every single time. There's just something godly about it. She becomes a mother in that moment. You can't eliminate a clump of cells once you hear the heartbeat and you know that's your little baby. Go help preborn do it. $28 buys that ultrasound, saves a life. Give it if you can. Give whatever you can. It's all tax deductible, I should point out. Preborn.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How can we enhance our capabilities using influence AI to both identify disinformation and create our own narratives? And since you just talked about breaking down silos, what do you think about the idea of having sort of an information czar, maybe at the National Security Council or another actor that will have sort of an overall view on protecting information resiliency in our domestic environment? Thanks.
It's a good question on the information czar. I think on the czar, that's something we've been grappling with and thinking about. But this may be an area where actually a lead agency model is a more effective way of setting up for long-term success that insulates this from the to's and fro's of politics on both sides. That's not just, by the way, about the election interference issues. It's about the larger question of how we decide messages we communicate, how we decide what messages we combat, which are fraught.
Interesting how evil these people truly are if you actually listen to what they say. Joining me now, a man who's been exposing this for a while. I love having Mike on. Mike Benz, Executive Director of the Foundation for Freedom Online. Mike, we point out the evil things these people do, but oftentimes it's a human coping mechanism. We act as if the really, really bad stuff is, it's in the future, it might come, it could possibly come, but these people are doing really evil things right freaking now, aren't they?
I'm shaking my head when you say that in agreement with you, but that's exactly right. I think the reason I'm shaking my head is because it's happening right now. So Jake Sullivan has to be very careful about the way that he responds to this question, because everything that was teed up in that question, from AI, artificial intelligence, surveillance of social media in order to have a political radar system for what they should censor or pre-censor, everything from having an information czar, everything from having a lead agency in control of what goes viral or what gets nuked on social media, is already here. It has already been here. And so Jake Sullivan, remember, is the National Security Advisor, is the guy who coordinates the CIA intelligence, the State Department diplomacy, and the U.S. military role in soft power projection. That means controlling hearts and minds, and that means controlling social media narratives. All of this was set up within the U.S. federal government out of the U.S. State Department's Global Engagement Center. They were the lead agency created for this in 2014, initially when the State Department developed a censorship capacity to take out ISIS. But then when Trump got elected in 2016 and when the Brexit vote went the wrong way from the State Department's perspective, and Bolsonaro and Matteo Salvini and Marine Le Pen and Nigel Farage started winning in Europe, they simply took that censorship apparatus that was parked out of the State Department's Global Engagement Center and they expanded their mandate from counterterrorism to counterpopulism. Then they brought it home domestically. They wanted to have the 2020 election censored using the State Department's Global Engagement Center, but they couldn't get away with it because it's supposed to be foreign-facing. So then they created CISA out of DHS to be the domestic node of the State Department so that they could censor Trump supporters with a lead agency, CISA, that could do that right here at home. And it would be free from the requirement of suspected lawbreaking because that's what the FBI is not allowed to do that, is not allowed to censor tweets. But CISA deemed misinformation tweets as a cyber attack on our critical infrastructure. Then CISA got in a lot of trouble. There was political blowback. The Disinformation Governance Board collapsed. Mayorkas was forced to say that CISA wouldn't do that again. By the way, they are. They're dispensing millions of dollars of grants to have a cutout swarm army do this presently. But right now, the issue is they are already involved in so much censorship. They have already funded hundreds of millions of dollars of AI censorship super weapons, but it's spread now between so many different agencies. They have the same problem they had in 2022 when they tried to set up the Disinformation Governance Board. They want one central communications, one central censorship communications command center so that everything CIA is doing, everything state is doing, everything DHS is doing, everything DOD is doing can be neatly coordinated top down. The problem is, If they do that, it gives them a small surface of attack politically to be able to take the whole thing down. So they're forced into this sort of clumsy bureaucratic model they currently have.
Well, at least they're bad at it. Mike, what's happening at the DOJ right now? You're hot on something. And man, when I listen, it's frightening. What are they doing?
Well, there's a lot that they're doing. But obviously from their attempts to, you know, throw everyone in jail, to try to warn everyone about anyone who pursues election integrity issues is going to jail, the threats to the lawyers. And then, you know, the fact that I think that there's a very real possibility that they will be going up against Elon Musk and trying to get legal leverage against him for allowing speech on social media during the, during this period between November and January, where we're going to be disputing who the, you know, I think whoever wins next Tuesday, there's going to be 2 months of arguing about who the real winner was, no matter what. But I think what you're referring to maybe more specifically is this new House Judiciary report that just dropped about the FBI and Facebook around the 2020 election. And there's this incredible quote from this report that Jim Jordan just put out from House Judiciary. And this is on July 15th, 2020, an employee at Facebook was so shocked by the U.S. government coercion of Facebook that the employee says, but when we get hauled up to Capitol Hill to testify on why we have influenced the 2020 elections, we can say that we've been meeting for years, in all caps, with the U.S. government to plan for it. And so Facebook was so self-reflective about the fact that their company had been hijacked by the intelligence arm of the U.S. government, that they were saying amongst themselves, hey, our defense when Republicans in Congress finally see what we're up to is we can hide behind the fact that it wasn't our decision. We were strong-armed by the FBI.
Mike, how in the world can Donald Trump tackle this issue if he is to be elected president, which is a big if? He keeps talking about draining the swamp and deep state stuff, and I'm glad he is discussing these things. But when these organizations are protected by the DOJ, even if he replaces the head of the DOJ, the FBI, honestly, look, the FBI should no longer exist, but I realize that's a pipe dream. How do you clean out corruption at that level? That should be FBI ending stuff, what you just described, yet the DOJ stands there as a shield. How can he do it? How can he drain the deep state when it's CIA, DOJ, NSA? How can he do it? Can it be done?
Now, Jesse, I'm so glad you bring this up, because one of the main lessons of the past 4 to 8 years has been that the most important agency in the entire federal government is not HHS or DOD or even state or CIA, as much as I talk about them. All roads lead through the Justice Department. Everything that you want to do, every act of accountability, every censure by Congress, every subpoena, at the end of the day, it has to be enforced by DOJ. And if the DOJ is corrupt, every agency in the federal government is allowed to be corrupt. And so there was a big problem last time. We put Bill Barr in. Bill Barr, who started his career as the mop-up man for the CIA. He was worked there for 7 years, right out at the start of his career, directly at CIA, was basically put through law school by the CIA, was the mop-up man for the CIA during Iran-Contra. And then, you know, even leaving aside all his connections to the Epstein network and other things, the fact is, you know, he sided with Team Blob at every opportunity. And I think part of the problem is how much Trump can get done in a second term is going to depend on what leverage is applied against him. They're surely going to do a Russiagate 17.0. They're surely going to have special prosecutors. They're surely going to have constant coup attempts and attempts to cause mutiny within his cabinet. So part of this is going to come down to the negotiation between Trump and his donors on the one hand, and Trump responding to crisis invocations by the Blob on the other, and the, you know, who personnel is policy, but who gets picked as personnel is a favors for favors relationship. So I've not yet seen who Trump is floating to be the head of the Justice Department. Certainly, they're going to try to do a sort of Schedule F cleaning house of some of the careers in the bureaucracy. That's what this whole attack Project 2025 is really about. It's about this this nuclear weapon, essentially, on purging a lot of the Blob operatives at these agencies. But I'll say, from my time in the White House, it seemed like DOJ was kind of untouchable by the Presidential Personnel Office. And I never really understood why that is, what kind of bureaucratic delay methods they have to prevent people from being fired. But I totally agree with your assessment. It's going to come down to, I think, a negotiation between Trump and his donors to make sure that the person that who's put in charge and the people who are put in charge of the entire senior leadership is all people who love this country and no snakes allowed.
Yeah, and that's a tough road to hoe. Mike, as always, you are awesome. Thank you, my man. Look, we have to get the election won first, but then the work really, really begins. We will all celebrate that night. You can watch me cover it right here on the first, I should note, but then the work begins. Now, probably need a laugh after that. Why don't you go watch Am I Racist? Matt Walsh's documentary, where he goes undercover with a really odd-looking man bun, and he talks to all these DEI freaks, and it just, it's pants-wetting funny. My sons laughed, I laughed, my wife laughed, and you have to become a Daily Wire Plus subscriber to watch it. 35% off, though. Here's what you have to do. Am I Racist, or I'm sorry, dailywire.com/subscribe and use the code DEI. dailywire.com/subscribe, code DEI. It's funny, it's informative, and it's safe for your entire family, which there's not much out there like that right now. So go become a Daily Wire Plus subscriber. Enjoy it. We'll be back.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Growing up in the 90s, I never thought much about race.
What's happening in this country? It's Nazism. Republicans are Nazis.
I'm going to sort this out. I need to go deeper undercover.
They gonna say I'm racist.
Joining us now is Matt, certified DEI expert.
Here's my certification.
What's up with white people? What are you doing to decenter your whiteness?
Who's making it the center? Why are they doing that?
And what you're doing is you're stretching out of your whiteness. This is more for you and less for you.
They gonna say Am I racist? Now streaming only on Daily Wire Plus.
This gives me the snickers, something fierce. Joining me now, Matt Walsh, of course, host of The Matt Walsh Show and documentary filmmaker. And he made Am I Racist? Honestly, you really need to watch it. Take your kids to it. You'll just, mine were just snickering the entire time. Matt, did you ever, I know a little bit about how you got started. I'm doing shows out of pretty much the back of a van, if I remember right. Did you ever foresee yourself being a documentary filmmaker?
Well, first of all, I was in the front of my car, not the back of it, just to be clear, when I was doing my show.
That's
okay. I didn't really. I think our first movie was What Is a Woman came out. We made that about 2 years ago. And prior to that, I thought about, making movies and that sort of thing, but especially the idea of making documentaries hadn't occurred to me until, we made that film.
Okay, I have to ask something, and you and I have talked before about similar things, but never this specifically. How did nobody know who you were? That's what kind of blows me away. I get it that they're not going to follow conservative politics or podcasts, and I understand that. I don't watch MSNBC. I get that, but I know who those people are. If you ask me if you introduce me to Rachel Maddow, even if you put glasses on her, I would know who that person is. None of these people said, hey, wait, you look a lot like Matt Walsh?
No, they didn't. I mean, there's just in the first workshop that I attend, the support group for white people, is, as you see in the movie, they eventually put the pieces together and they kicked me out once they put the piece. Even then, it took them a while to put the pieces together and realize who I was. But beyond that, it really didn't happen. And I think that there's part of it is that they live in this bubble. And I think you have more of that bubble on the left than you do on the right, because you're right. I mean, I know for me, it would be very difficult for someone on the left to make a documentary like this in this style and dupe me. Because for one thing, this is what I do, so I'd be looking out for it. But even more than that, I know who these people, I don't sit and watch CNN, but I'd recognize someone from CNN because I'm at least aware enough of what the other side is saying. But on the left, I think that they kind of stay in their shell, in their bubble a lot more. And then there's also just the kind of, it's human psychology. It's a weird thing where people, I think it's possible that some of the people in the film, they may have kind of recognized me or thought that they did. But when you're in that environment and it's out of context and nobody else is saying anything, everyone else is acting like it's normal. So you feel like you don't want to be the first one to speak up. So I think all those things probably work together to make it possible to make the movie.
It is amazing, yeah. It is amazing. Well, speaking of DEI, it's pretty appropriate to discuss this now because in a roundabout way, if the election goes our way a little less than a week from now, DEI could very well cost Democrats the White House. That's why Kamala Harris was chosen. Joe Biden was very loud and proud about this, so no one can deny it. He announced to everybody he was going to choose a woman, and it was going to be a black woman. And since it was that left Dome or Stacey Abrams, they chose to go with Dome. And now you have this moron who can't complete sentences. She doesn't know anything about anything, and everyone hates her guts. DEI may have saved the White House for us.
It may. I mean, we can hope. I feel pretty good at this point, you know, heading into next week. I think the polls are on our side for the most part. I feel like the vibes are very pro-Trump right now, but I've felt that way in the past, and we know how it worked out. Because it could well. Yeah, I mean, if it goes that way, then we can say in a weird way, DEI is what saved us. But at the same time, and I know that most people watching this, I don't need to tell them this, but it still bears saying anyway, that if Kamala Harris ends up in the White House, I mean, I'm not gonna say it's gonna be the end of the country, because we're gonna continue to fight on, but it will be total catastrophe. Because on top of the fact that she is unqualified for the position, she's only put there because she checked the demographic boxes. That is all true, but she's not just an empty pantsuit. She is also a far left true believer. And I think sometimes that element of it is a little bit underrated on the right, because we talk about her like she's nothing but this total phony, which again, she is, but she does really believe in this stuff. And so it's kind of the worst of all worlds in a lot of ways.
It is. Speaking of Dome, everyone saw Joe Biden's comments last night, or the comments heard around the world, where he poops his pants on television again and calls everyone garbage. Dome was asked about this today. This is what she said.
President Biden put his comment last night about garbage.
Listen, I think that, first of all, he clarified his comments, but let me be clear. I strongly disagree with any criticism of people based on who they vote for.
Do you sympathize with any voters who do feel offended by or insulted by the garbage comments?
I am running for president of the United States. I will be traveling to 3 states today to do what I have been doing throughout, which is talking with the American people about the fact that, first of all, I get it in terms of the concerns they have about challenges like the price of groceries.
Matt, these two really do hate each other, and it's obvious at this point in time. I can't stop watching. I think it's fantastic.
I hadn't heard that clip. They just played it, and that's pretty. I mean, that's as close as she's going to get to directly rebuking Joe Biden, which I agree is pretty hilarious. I mean, they do obviously hate each other, and you know, I guess it's considered to be a conspiracy theory that well, maybe Biden doesn't like Harris and is trying to sabotage her. No, it's not like, of course he hates her and wants to sabotage her. Like, obviously, I mean, if you are mentoring someone, if you put them in a position and then they stab you in the back and push you to the side and try to take your job from you, are you going to be rooting for them to succeed? Of course you're not. Like, of course you're sitting there hoping that they fail. So it is pretty, it's fun to watch. We just, you know, as long as it has a happy ending, we can have fun with it.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, let's talk about if Donald Trump wins, which is a big if, as you pointed out. Nobody should be counting their chickens at this point in time, because nothing has hatched yet. But if he wins, and much more than him, because it's a lot more important than just him, House, Senate, down ballot race, local races. Let's say we have a great November. Well, then the work actually begins of undoing all the damage, possibly mortal damage, they've done for the last 4 years, namely filling up the country with a bunch of rapists and murderers from various barbaric countries. Does this country have the stomach for mass deportation? Does the GOP, because you'll have to forgive me, Matt, if I'm a little bit cynical on that front, given what I've seen in response to St. George Floyd, to COVID, to everything else, are we ready for what's necessary?
Yeah, well, I think there's two different questions. Does the country have the stomach for it? Does the GOP have the stomach for it? I think the country does. I think the country has more than the stomach for it. I mean, the country is ready for someone to get in there and put an end to this madness and show that they actually care about our laws and care about our sovereignty, national sovereignty, care about the well-being of actual American citizens, I think the country certainly has a stomach for it. The GOP, on the other hand, I'm extremely skeptical, because if you go in there and you actually start mass deportations, which is what needs to happen, we know about, we can only imagine the histrionics, the hysterics we're going to see about you're separating families and all these kinds of things. I hope that, well, even if the GOP doesn't have the stomach for it, at least hopefully they feel like they have to do it politically, because this is what the country demands. And by the way, on the deportation thing, we often hear, and this is even Republicans will say that, well, it's a complicated issue. You've got people that have been here for a long time and it's complicated. It's actually not complicated. It's very, very simple. If you're not here legally, you need to go. It's like a very simple thing. It might be emotionally hard. If you're a sensitive person, it might feel bad to see people get rounded up and kicked out. That doesn't make me feel bad, but it might make some people feel bad. But emotionally hard and complicated are not the same thing. And so it's not complicated. It's a pretty simple solution, actually.
That's a great way to put that. Emotionally complicated and hard are not the same thing. I think I'm going to steal that and act like I came up with it. Matt Walsh, thank you, my brother, as always. Great documentary. I love it. All right. Lighten the mood. Next.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put 2 and 2 together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And I know you're going to find this shocking, but communists hate my guts. They just do. They hate my guts, and the feeling is mutual. As I've said many times before, I don't whine about it. We are enemies. We are going to fight until the day they bury me, and that's just the way that's always going to go. And so the communists are angry with me again about something offensive I said. Actually, not here on I'm Right. It's something they took offense to on the radio. Remember Tony Hinchcliffe, the comedian, got up, he made the Puerto Rican joke. Everyone's dogging on the joke. That joke was hilarious. And I went on the radio and I said it was hilarious.
Oh, and I almost forgot before we get to the emails that we have that hilarious Puerto Rican joke that comedian dropped last night at Madison Square Garden. Play it, Chris.
There's a lot going on. I don't know if you guys know this, but there's literally a floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean right now. Yeah. I think it's called Puerto Rico.
That's hilarious. And today people are pretending to be offended by it. Oh, shut up. You tell those same jokes with your friends. You know who tells those jokes with their friends? Puerto Ricans. So stop being offended on other people's behalf. For some reason, that's like a Western thing, being offended on behalf of other people. It's ridiculous.
Well, the commies, of course, they listen to every word I say. Isn't that weird? It's crazy. It's really kind of cool. But they listen, they record everything, and now Media Matters. Media Matters, remember, it's a communist organization that was created to run people on the right off the air, run them off the radio, run them off TV, run them off YouTube, run them off social media. Its entire purpose is canceling people, and they've tried to do this to me so many times I can't even count. Can't ever cancel me, communists, by the way. And they ran an article, and this is the headline. Trump ally Jesse Kelly praises hilarious anti-Puerto Rico joke and tells Tony Hinchcliffe's critics to shut up. First of all, it was hilarious. Second of all, Trump ally is just, of all the things you could call me, that's actually kind of one of the funnier things. I mean, I'm voting for Trump, of course. I don't work for him or anything like that. That's one. Two, wait, that's one and two. Three, this is where and how we have been very successful fighting back against cancel culture. I don't know Tony Hinchcliffe. He's not a friend. I've never met him. I'm going to a show. Whenever I hear he's coming to town, I've already told the wife, scarf us up some tickets. We're going to go buy some tickets, and I'm going to go hear some hilarious insults, some inappropriate ones. Ooh, and I'm going to laugh. All right? I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.